Chapter 33, Wraith Headquarters.
Mid-morning the next day, Vort, dressed again in his orange X-Wing fighter pilot jumpsuit, began dispatching Wraiths from their operations center. He heard Huhuna roar off on the larger swoop. She'd be joining Jesmyn, forming Team Shellfish. The two of them would be making their last insertion into Chakum Base. There was a metallic slam as Scut finished loading the delivery speeder. In moments, the Yuuzhan Vong appeared in the doorway, then nimbly navigated among all the remaining Wraiths as they packed their bags, donned disguises, checked the charges on their blaster rifles and pistols. Scut stood before Vort.
What's our motto?
What do we blow up first?
The other one. Good news and bad news.
Stang.
Partway through sealing up his two tight black boots, Vort slumped.
Bad news first.
I just heard from the commercial managers of the courthouse plaza. There was a mistake, and the space for our tent was rented to someone else, a souvenir seller.
A mistake?
Clearly, the mistake was that the souvenir seller came to them with more money than what we paid. The plaza managers have refunded our money with insincere apologies. But the souvenir booth is already set up.
Vort sighed.
Can we get any other spot in the plaza this late?
Yes, I secured us a spot at the edge. But the first bad news leads to more bad news.
Irritated, Vort resumed sealing up his second boot.
Spill it.
Our escape droid reported early to the location I gave it yesterday. It didn't realize that the souvenir stand was not us. The stand operator told it that its services were not needed, so it returned to its dispatcher and was given another assignment.
Vort growled and stood.
And how about securing us another escape droid?
None available.
Blast it! I'm going to strafe that souvenir stand.
This was indeed bad news. Escape droid, in this case a model V-37 Ambassador, was a humanoid droid whose entire torso and head area was replaced by a large monitor or holoprojector. Skittish negotiators would send escape droids to a parlay site and speak to one another through the safe telepresence functions offered by the droids. The Wraiths needed their escape droid to foster an illusion and escape with their identities intact. Vort got to work donning his other gear.
Well, we're just going to have to improvise. Get us a new escape droid.
I have tried. There is none closer than orbit, and all are engaged. This is a small world. There are only three on planet.
Scut, I'm about to go get shot at. You have to fix this.
Scut threw up his hands.
I am not complaining. I am not shirking duty. But I have to manage the changing booth. Timing there is very complicated.
I'll take the changing booth.
Mulis Cheems, the only island of calm in the room, rose from his chair.
I know your equipment, son. I know your procedures.
No, father. This is dangerous work.
Oh, yes. I should let my son run off to do dangerous work while I sit here watching holodramas.
Mulis moved up to stand beside Scut and Vort.
Vayul, I think I would very much like to pay back the debt I owe the Wraiths.
That's what I'm doing.
Mulis smiled but shook his head.
You can help them all you want, and it will never diminish my debt. Wait until you've incurred a debt of your own, then you'll know what I'm talking about.
He looked at Vort.
Sign me up, Professor.
Vort considered, then nodded.
Scut will show you what goes with who. The first sign of trouble you see or hear, you lie down on the ground and stay there.
Father!
Scut leaned forward, pleading. Mulis leaned forward, too, and touched his forehead to his son's.
At a certain point, Vayul, you'll learn that you just can't keep protecting your parents from themselves. Parents are wild, hormone-addled, uncontrollable creatures. As you'll understand someday when you're a parent.
Vort was struck by the two men's identical poses. In age, height, mass, and skin color, they were different. but their postures were identical. Scott finally lowered his eyes and nodded. Vort waved to get their attention.
Scott, the good news? There was some, correct?
Team Oversight is ready.
Then get going.
Vort watched as Scut, Mulis, Thames, and Ran, now in burgundy clothes and a new hip cloak, left. Dracal, wearing a Popdog sergeant's uniform, watched them go.
I hate last-minute changes.
Get used to them.
That was Trey, standing beside him, in a blue Galactic Alliance Army General's uniform, a headset on his head instead of a hat.
How's the package?
Dracal looked baffled.
Your package on Skifter Station? Shaw's package on Skifter Station? Or our package here?
Here.
Fine. In the speeder. The repulsor cart's loaded in back.
Trey turned to Vort.
Leader, we have to come up with better package designations.
Agreed. Next time.
Trey took off his headset and put it in a pocket. He hefted his Neoglyph masker.
Speaking of which, Mind Boy reports he and his package are boarding to leave the station.
I hear you.
Vort hefted his helmet. Trey donned the Neoglyph masker. Dracal helped him fit it and shove its trailing edges down under the uniform's collar. When they were done, Trey was an identical image of General Staven Thal. General Thal picked up and donned his hat.
Team Enemy Mine, ready.
Get going. Good luck.
When the two of them were gone and the sound of their airspeeder had retreated in the distance, comparative silence descended over the operations center. Only Vort and Miri were left, both in X-Wing pilot's gear. Miri's hair was now a virtual match in color for Mulis's coral-cut sapphires. Miri lifted her helmet.
Team Rage, ready.
Let's get 'em, Antilles.
She grinned. But once they were down in the quarry, standing beside their X-Wings, Miri hesitated.
We don't know that they're inner core pop dogs.
Vort finished with the portable frame and winch he'd used to lower his astromech into position behind the cockpit. Miri's was already in place.
Meaning we're about to go up and shoot at people who might not know that they're serving a traitor.
Miri nodded, her eyes miserable. Vort wheeled the frame away.
Well, now you're at that point. A point your father doubtless hit when he was younger than you, just joining the Rebel Alliance. The point where you ask yourself, can I kill someone I'm not sure is guilty?
You've been waiting for this, haven't you?
Vort nodded.
Ever since I realized how meticulous you were about making sure your blaster was always set on stun. And now you're stuck with lasers and missiles, and they can't be set on stun.
She leaned heavily against the S-foil of her X-Wing.
Maybe you could have warned me.
Maybe thinking about it for days would have made you neurotic.
Vort moved to the nose of his starfighter, patted it as if it were a riding animal.
Miri, I might be able to do this mission myself. Odds are kind of long, but I might be able to. Or we could summon Char back, rusty as he is behind the controls, and let Mulis tend his package. But I think you can do this, because you're your father's daughter, and because you've grown up knowing that a warrior like your dad sometimes has to face an honorable enemy. An enemy whose only fault is that he's working at cross purposes with you. And if you don't fight him until he falls, very bad things will result. Which is the situation here.
I guess it is.
You have to keep this in mind. You have to win.
She gave him a slow, miserable nod.
So?
She sighed and put on her helmet. She snapped the visor down over her eyes and added the helmet's final non-regulation element, a veil of black clinging synth silk over her lower face.
Good.
Vort donned his own helmet and veil. Then, awkward, he climbed onto the strike foil and into his cockpit. They lifted off, crested the quarry clifftop, and headed southward over the property at an altitude of 2 meters. They observed local speed regulations. Other speeder pilots, less conscientious, passing them at higher speeds, pointed at the two beautifully restored antique X-wings with hand-built missiles bolted onto their strike foils, and at the two veiled pilots. Vort and Miri stayed in the main airspeeder lanes all the way into Kura City's south side, creating no sensor blip that would cause a suspicious traffic warden to challenge them. But then they were at the city limits again, and pointed toward Chakum Base. Vort clicked his comm board over to the main Wraith channel.
Rage 1 to Team Enemy Mine, Team Shellfish. We are a go. I say again, we are a go.
Trey was clearly in character when he answered. He spoke in General Fall's gravelly tones.
Enemy mine, understood. Go get him, soldier.
Jesmyn replied in a whisper.
Shellfish here. Understood.
Vort switched back to the subfrequency he and Miri shared.
Rage 1 to Rage 2. We're going in.
Lying prone on his cot in the room he had been given, Terman heard the distinctive triple click over his headset. Then it came again. He sat upright and stood. The nurse, a male Chadra fan, looked over in concern.
Are you all right? Sunlight! Embassy who climbs needs sunlight!
Terman's throat was hoarse from performing the rough Embassy who climbs voice for days.
No. You said sunlight would hurt you.
The nurse rose, tilting back to stare up at his much taller patient.
Before, yes. Now, need sun! Life cycle demands! I need to calm the front office for permission.
Terman raised his hand, as if pointing at Karatooine's star.
Sun!
Then he brought his fist down on the Chadra fan's head. The durable exoskeleton of his hand cracked down on the small humanoid skull with a meaty thump. The man collapsed to the floor, his comlink clattering down beside him. Terman grimaced. Getting on his feet, swinging that blow had been difficult. The Neoglyph suit was weaker, much weaker. The thing was dying. He waited a second to see if Pop Dogs would come bursting in through the door. None did. That was great news. It meant that, as they had across the last couple of days, the soldiers believed in Embassy Who Climbs' passiveness and cooperativeness. They didn't always have a guard in front of his door, relying on the nurse to warn them of trouble. That, and one other thing. The door didn't open for Terman as he approached it, but he punched the keypad with one oversized, hard-shelled finger, using the nurse's code, which he had spent considerable time and effort to observe while pretending to be asleep. The door slid aside. In a back hall of a minor function building, well away from the main base facilities, Embassy Who Climbs went tiptoeing toward the building's rear door.
I wish Muscle Boy were here.
Jesmyn, aggrieved, bent over the building's rear door handle, a bar meant to be depressed. There was clearly security on the door. Multiple contact points of metal extended from the frame to touch others on the door. The security was more extensive than Jesmyn was comfortable with. Beside her, keeping watch all around, Huhuna rumbled a reply in Wookiee. Let's just blast it.
What?
Jesmyn looked at her. Huhuna gestured all around. To their right, southward, were empty drill yards. Leftward, more of the same. 10 meters behind them was the start of the closest thick stand of trees. There was no one to be seen. The voices of Pop Dogs practicing close-order marching drills sounded far away. Huhuna hefted her bowcaster and gave Jesmyn a significant look.
Oh, all right.
Jesmyn pocketed her electronics bypass tool and took a couple of steps back.
Go ahead.
Huhuna fired. The bowcaster bolt hit the door beside the lock and detonated, charring the door metal. The lock and the left portion of the opening bar disintegrated. Huhuna grabbed the door well away from the superheated portion and shoved it open. Embassy Who Climbs stood there. He put his hands on his hips as if indignant. Klutz! The building alarm sounded. They sprinted, tottered very quickly in Terman's case, into the woods as other alarms on the base began wailing. They got only deep enough into the trees that the building was no longer in sight. Then Terman stopped. He reached up and ripped open his alien mask so the others could see his real face, which was flushed red and sweating. He yanked at his chest, splitting it open, and tore himself free from the suit's interior. As he emerged, so did a sweet, sickly odor of rotting sea life. Jesmond and Huhuna took several steps back. Shaking himself free of the suit's legs, Terman advanced on them. His body glistened from sweat, and whatever the suit's interior had secreted on him. His eyes were wild, and his words emerged in a scream.
Get me to a Sadisteem!
Time to leave, stage boy. This way.
Jesmond pointed northward and led the way, trying to keep well ahead of the funk that surrounded Terman.
A pool, a waterfall, an acid bath, sandpaper! Get me clean!
Dracal unloaded the folding hover cart from the back of the speeder, set it up, and activated it. Then he carried the unconscious Ladina Chot from the back seat and stretched her out atop the cart. He shook a blanket over her, covering her from head to foot. Only then did Trey, impervious in his general fall garb, exit the vehicle.
Did you switch on her ring?
I remembered.
The main doors into the building were several meters away, directly under the sign that read Major Savings Army Surplus. But Trey marched to an unmarked side door made of transparasteel. Through it, he could see a small office, a hallway leading from it deeper into the building, a muscular young man with close-cut brown hair lounging in a desk chair. Trey schooled his features, Fall's features, into an expression of disapproval. He hammered on the door. The man behind the desk looked over, then stood so fast it looked as though he came up off the floor. He opened the door.
General?
It's bad, son. Very bad.
Trey waved Dracal forward. The Deveronian came forward, pushing the hover cart.
That body. Do you know Private Zispisterling?
Trey stood in the doorway, keeping it open, as Dracal pushed the cart through.
No, sir.
Well, she's dead now, so you're never going to. You hear the alarms?
The man cocked his head. Though not loud at this distance, the wailing alerts from the base were indeed audible. The man's face went blank.
Sir, are we under attack?
Hell yes. Take us down immediately.
Yes, sir.
The ostensible clerk half saluted, remembered that this was not the right protocol, and dashed into the hallway. Trey and Dracal followed. As they moved along a back corridor flanked by storerooms, well behind the clerk, Dracal leaned forward to stage whisper to Trey.
Nice improvisation on the alarm thing.
There weren't supposed to be sirens yet. I didn't know what else to say.
No, I meant it. Nice improv.
The false clerk led them into a side room that was far too large and empty for its evident purpose. An unmanned comm center with one large computer communications unit and a single chair. As soon as the door was closed, the clerk hammered on the undecorated back wall. It was a distinctive series of taps. The wall slid aside, revealing a chamber of similar size. But this one had durasteel mesh walls showing rock walls and steel support pillars beyond. It was a freight lift car. They moved onto the car. Trey turned to the clerk.
I need you to come with us.
Baffled, the clerk joined them. He hit a button on the front wall control panel, and the wall door closed. He hit another, and they began their descent.
General, if I may ask...
The body on the hover cart moaned and stirred. The clerk looked at her blanket-shrouded body, his eyes wide. Trey opened his own eyes wide as well.
A miracle, Sergeant. You know what to do.
Dracal drew his blaster and shot the clerk at point-blank range. The stun bolt took the man in the chest. He slammed back into the metal mesh wall and slumped. Thal turned to the controls.
Long way down. We have a few seconds.
He whipped the blanket off Ladina, revealing her to be wearing the same dress in which she'd been kidnapped. Her eyes were closed, but she was fitful, her head now turning as she struggled to awaken.
How much time, drug boy?
a few minutes. I can give her a stimulant.
No, don't worry about it.
Trey looked up and noted the location of the lift car's roof access hatch. 2 seconds later, the lift came to a stop. The shaft's back wall and the car's rear metal mesh wall rose. Just beyond them was a stony tunnel that ran off into dimness in the distance. Along its floor ran a metal rail. The stone ceiling had wires stretched along it, with glow rod coils every 5 meters. Standing right at the door was a dark-furred Bothan woman in a Pop Dog corporal's uniform. Her eyes widened, and she saluted.
General!
Dracal shot her.